Welcome back, listeners. On this episode, I spoke to costume designer Deirdre Govan about her work on Devotion. Govan was nominated for a Black Reel Award for Outstanding Costume Design in Sorry to Bother You. Devotion was directed by J.D. Dillard.
I wanted to start out with just a basic sort of just softball question, and just what's inspiring you right now?
To be honest, the search for peace, serenity within one's own self. There was a question that I often get asked from people is, what are you working on right now? And interestingly enough, someone sent me a post from someone else, and I can't remember their name. And the person's response was, I'm working on me right now. I'm working on inner peace. I'm working on, you know, boundaries, which I feel is very important in this business, because the lines get blurred between professional work time and personal time. And it's very easy for people to settle into being humble braggers and saying, oh, I'm doing this, but I'm so tired. But to me, the question is not about, oh, I'm working on this and so tired. I'm working and I'm grateful. And I'm working, but I'm working on staying in peace and working on myself and my growth always. So I've been in this industry a very long time. It's taking me a while to get to this point, and I'm still climbing, but it's important to keep something for myself, which is that of my inner peace.
Mm. I love that. And so you are very particular, I can tell from the projects that you pick. And I would love to know what stories draw you in. Why do you pick the projects that you do? And I think, and this is a very big compliment. I think it's very admirable what you do. So I'm very curious as to where did the, maybe not consciousness switch, but where did the decision-making process, like, where did the line in the sand?
I think my past work experiences in this industry, my educational background, I have friends that accuse me of being the consummate student because I'm always learning. I have many degrees and I get teased about that, but I think what is important to me is having all these experiences that I was never really interested in just having a project or doing a project just to say for the sake of doing it, or for the sake of getting a check. And that's not a privilege statement. It's just a very honest one. I have strived not to be put in a box. I have strived not to be labeled as a designer of color, but as a designer and a creator, period. I'm a design activist. I'm vice president of United Scenic Artists Local 829. I'm very active in all things union. I'm very active in pay equity. I'm also a member of 892, our Costume Designers Guild, and have been for the past few years. But I would say, what's important to me is legacy and what happens when you leave this earth and what do you leave behind. So it is important for me to make conscious decisions that not only challenge me creatively, but put me in an arena where I am not pigeonholed and, you know, looked at as someone who just does X, Y, and Z. I think my world experience, you know, my travels, my education, my professional background, and just work in this industry alone has informed my creative process and the decisions that I make, not just on my own, but with my agents and managers and my team. I want to do projects that mean something. And I don't just say that as a lark. Even if something is very off center, there's a reason why, you know, I'm interested in that project or I want to go for that project. suffice to say, it doesn't mean that if there's something that I never would have thought of that's, you know, brought to my attention, I read scripts voraciously. It's important for me to really get into the mind of the storytellers, directors, writers, and what they're trying to convey. But I really need to feel it. I want to be a part of something that, you know, is a lasting impact on audiences and gives people, you know, pause and the ability to think about it and talk about it long after the movie has left the theaters or left the streamers. So.
I love that. Love that. You're just so great to talk to. I love it.
Well, I've been waiting for you a long time, Jackson. So I'm excited to you.
So there was a viral New York Times piece that went around that caught a lot of costume designers' attention. Yes. And I would love to get your take on this and to give background to listeners. It was a piece, I think it was the top 90 or top 100 pictures that sort of shaped culture this year or excited culture. And the actresses were named, the photographers were named, but of course, the costume designers were left off, as many times they are.
Yes.
And so I would just like to know from your perspective, what does that mean, especially when the media doesn't cover the work, like the actual work?
It's a loaded question, and it's one that I think it's not just about having the conversation, but it's putting this forward. I think the time is now. I think it's long overdue. It directly connects to pay inequity in our industry. But I also think it goes back to education and also conditioning for what perception is. I think the unfortunate, I guess, visual impact of this is that the assumption is that it's all about what you see on screen and the actors just automatically get dressed and show up in this way. There is a whole creative team behind how and why this actor is wearing a particular piece of clothing or item or their dress for a specific scene. And that is all the costume designer in concert with the production designer and the director. Our job is to give skin and depth to these brilliant actors that we are working with. But I think, unfortunately, there's been a rhythm that's been going on for quite some time where costume designers are literally in the back room and that we are not front and center and important enough in some circumstances, unless you have a certain amount of notoriety to be recognized. And that is unfortunate. And I think the work that we've been doing in the Guild is really zeroing in on that. It's not to start an argument, but a conversation, because the reality is the value of a costume designer is sorely undervalued. And the work we do is reflective in that respect. I'll give you a perfect example. If you were to go on IMDb, every craft that is a department head is represented. You have your cinematographer, your production designer, your composer, your writer, your producer, your director, but your costume designer is not represented. And we are essentially the creative triad or triangle, so to speak, with that director between cinematographer, production designer, and costume designer. Those are the key three department heads that inform what you're going to see on screen. And it's unfortunate that it has been such a longstanding practice, but the hope is that it will change. But I think it will only change with education and consistent, you know, front and center information, like what you referenced that has been appearing up online. We need to stand firm and, you know, articulate our voices as creatives that are of value. And what we put up visually on screen has the capability to change the dynamic of fashion and perception. So there's a lot to that, but it's very timely and I am very much, you know, in it. I believe in this initiative and I don't think it's a one-off. I think it's something that's going to be a long haul.
No, and thank you for giving me that answer because I haven't had a chance to talk to a costume designer yet since that drop. So you were the guinea pig on this question.
I mean, there's more of us. I think, you know, it's just important for people to realize that actors don't get dressed by themselves. The decisions are not made by actors alone. There is a costume designer who has worked very hard and, you know, to consistently deliver a message and to tell a story. And that is our job. I always try to allow people the understanding. Many of us are stylists. Many of us, you know, do things outside when we're not designing film or television, but there is a true difference in the craft and how we create. It's not about shopping. You know, it's a whole list of other skill sets that come into play. I often get asked this question, and I'm often, several people reach out to me regularly, and, you know, there's this misconception that we are glorified shoppers. There's this misconception that, well, it's just clothes. It's not just clothes. There's a reason, there's a rationale behind every decision that is made, that we as costume designers, you know, really work hard to articulate and make sure that we're clear in what we're putting up on screen and how we're creating these characters.
Mm-hmm. No, 100%. I mean, it's interesting because when something like the Critics' Choice nominees came out this week and you start going down the list and then you get to the part where it's like visual effects, sound, or maybe not sound. I don't think they do sound, but they just start getting to the other below the line crafts. And for me, that's interesting. And I want to know who was a part of it, but then they don't even put a name. And so I'm like, what's wrong? There's something, I mean, there's just a huge disconnect. And so it's not that, I mean, they're kind of one and the same, but it just, I've always been bothered by that. And so I'm anyway.
We are too.
But we can finally, almost 20 minutes into the conversation, we can get to devotion. Sorry, I just had to ask these preamble questions. So why devotion? Why did that script call your name? I mean, I can see why, but I would like to know from you why.
Well, I'll say that my team had sent me a handful of projects at that time. And when I read devotion, I immediately tapped into the fact that my stepdad was a Korean War veteran. And I read it and I saw him. The story really appealed to me from the sense of the fact that I had never heard of Jesse Brown at that time was quite embarrassing for myself. We all know the stories of a Tuskegee Airman. We've talked, we've created many films based around those stories, but never had a story been told about the first Black naval aviator in Korea and his untimely, you know, death. So for me, it was well written. And right after I read the script, I went and got the book. And that gave me even more depth to who these men were, their families, their history, where they came from, their completely different worlds that they existed in. And I felt it was a story that needed to be told. And I wanted to be a part of something that, you know, was really helping to add to the vernacular of not just Black stories, but stories in general about military wartime. I'm fascinated by, you know, things like that. It's always been of interest to me. I do enjoy war movies, ironically. But it was a great story. And I read a lot, and it was something that jumped out at me. And when I had the meeting with JD, our director, it was really speaking with him and understanding his background, his passion, his love of aviation, his father being an aviator. that just really drew me in. And then when I met the team, the producing team, I was even more excited. Glenn Powell was a huge draw to me, and I had always been a fan of Jonathan Majors since Last Black Man in San Francisco, which was a project that I was interested in working on at the time, but my schedule did not permit it. So it was just a synchronistic, you know, everything just lined up in that moment. Mm-hmm. We were at the height of COVID and winter, we were all shut down. And the script came pretty much as things were slowly opening back up. And there was an opportunity in that moment. And I took it. And I was asked to join. And I feel very honored to have had that opportunity.
And so you mentioned that your grandfather was in the Korean War. Father. Sorry. your father was in the Korean War. And I'm just curious, in looking at pictures of him and in looking at sort of that moment in time of his life, what did you take from those pictures of him to replicate in this film?
Quite a bit. He actually shared the images with me, and he's my stepdad, by the way. He shared the images with me pretty, you know, midway during prep. And what was exciting for me was the fact that I had already done my due diligence and research, of course, because these were real people. So, you know, any costume designer, we all start with the research and finding images and as much information as possible. So when I saw his photographs that he shared with me, I was quite excited because I was already building costumes that replicated exactly what he was wearing, you know, his olive drabs, his greens, his hats, his actual bomber jacket. So that was quite special. And I felt like, oh, okay, I must be on the right path here. So, yeah. And it was inspiring to see. It was also heartfelt because those are rare moments that you don't often see.
Yeah. And what did your stepfather think of it?
He cried. He was very emotional about it. I will be going home to Texas for the holidays, so I will be able to see him and talk about the project because I have not seen him since since it's come out. Mm-hmm. So, it's just when you work on projects that have leave such an indelible mark on some people, maybe not all. It's special. It's a special feeling to have a hand in creating something like Devotion, because it is a project that is for all of us that stepped into this endeavor. It wasn't just, okay, let's just go do this movie. We all had a unique connection to this film. Mm-hmm. So
obviously with the challenges of one, COVID, two, scope of project, three, I mean, just so many other things, but like, what is a challenge that you had on this project that wasn't the same as your past projects?
Oh God, I think the consistency is time. It could be your, you know, worst enemy or best ally. I had 7 weeks to prepare and fit and build in time to get ready to start shooting. And even as we were shooting, the prepping was still going on. We were prepping, shooting all pretty much within the same breath. That's a challenge. When you work on such a short time frame, it's almost like walking a tightrope because you have no room for error. And so for me, the pressure was to get it right. Fortunately, I amassed some really incredible artisans. I had two incredible military costumers who were former servicemen who had a wealth of knowledge in this arena. Even though they served in the Gulf War, they had a lot of valuable knowledge that really helped support the decisions that I was making. And I also had some incredible rental houses that are legendary in, you know, the costume design arena. And they essentially, if they did not have it, meaning if they didn't have certain costumes that I needed, I would build them. So a lot of the resources that we as costume designers use came into play for me. I had builders in Georgia, where we were filming, in LA, and overseas, just to pull all of these elements together, because a lot of the original uniforms did not exist. And if they did, if we didn't find enough of what we needed in the costume houses, we were building. All of the principals' costumes were original builds. There are full costumes that weren't even seen in Devotion, because in our editing process, some of those scenes were edited out. Even some of the fitting photos that I have, you know, we have them in full olive drab dress. You have their khaki and olive greens, which you do see in the film, but there is a full olive suit. They're also their dress blacks. You see them in their dress whites. So they're just, you know, various things that go into creating a story, especially of this scope, and trying to make sure you get it as accurate as possible.
And so in viewing this film for your first time, what did you take away from it?
That's, I am extremely critical of myself. So oftentimes it is not easy for me to watch projects that I work on, because I'm picking them apart and I'm saying, oh, well, that was wrong, or I missed that, or somebody wasn't paying attention and that shouldn't have happened, or a background actor zeroed in on and something was wrong. So it's hard for me to kind of sit back and relax, as they say. I think once I see things maybe a second and third time, it's easier. I can kind of separate, individuate myself from it. And oftentimes when I do that and I'm looking at it as a viewer would view a show, I get excited because I'm like, oh, wow, yeah, that was really good. Or, ooh, that wasn't so good. But I still, at the end of the day, I enjoy seeing how all the elements have come together to create something that is, you know, exciting to watch. And again, leaves people wanting more or thinking about what they've just viewed.
And so we talked about this at the beginning, but what is next for you, and what's on the dream list for you? What have you not done that you want to do?
Okay. I'm really interested in, I travel a lot. I've lived overseas many, many times on and off. I'd really like to do a full court press, a global production, you know, one that's shooting all over the world. I've never worked on a film that's shooting internationally. So I think that's my next step. And really just continuing to, you know, be a part of projects that have meaning and depth and that are exciting and you know, are timely in their own manner. They don't all have to be serious, but I do feel that I want to be a part of projects that, you know, change some type of dynamic or perception in some way. So I'm open. I try not to put boundaries on things, because when you start doing that, the universe may redirect you. So I leave it open. I think all I ask at the end of the day is to be a part of something that's positive, with good people, and a great cast. I think that's what any designer would want. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, you got that with Devotion. So that's a win right there. But Deirdre, I want to thank you so much.
This was so much fun. Yes. Thank you. I enjoy talking to you, and thank you for all that you're doing and elevating, you know, our voices as costume designers. It really means a lot. And I hope, you know, you will continue to, you know, explore, you know, our worlds and shine a light.
Thank you all for listening. This episode was edited and produced by me, Jackson Vickery. Graphics were done by Dylan Michael. and the opening and closing theme were done by Sterling Gavinsky.